Hi, CityCast listeners. Today, to kick off an occasional series about Houston neighborhoods, we're talking about West U. It's an upscale, small town entirely surrounded by Houston. I'm joined by two proud West U residents, CityCast contributor Evan Mintz and Houston writer Chris Kander, who has some great, spot-on descriptions of West U in her brand new novel, A Gracious Neighbor. It's Tuesday, July 26, 2022. I'm Lisa Gray, and this is CityCast Houston. Evan and Chris, thank you all so much for joining me. Chris, I have been reading your novel, and I am just loving it. I don't think enough fiction has been written about Houston, and the picture of West U that I am getting is... it feels right. It's really fun. And Evan, you also live in West U, right?
That's right. I'm on the Parks Board.
Oh, that's a very West U thing to be. All right. So y'all are my West U experts. Let's start. What is West U? Where is it? Why is it called West U?
Well, West U, as you can get from the name, it is west of the university, and that university is Rice University.
Okay, proper name, West University Place. Yes. It is a place west of Rice University.
Correct.
Okay.
It's its own city. It's got 15,000 people.
It is a city entirely surrounded by Houston?
And Southside Place.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's another boundary.
Correct.
Okay.
Southside Place is like the little door. If you look at the perimeter, the shape of West University Place, it looks like a house. And the doorway cutout is Southside Place.
Oh.
So we sort of surround Southside Place.
Yeah. The idea that it's shaped like a house, that seems perfect to me for West U. Because it feels like a suburban place, a small town kind of place.
It does kind of feel like a little slice of Mayberry. In that it's got its own little fire department, its own little police department, you know, its own little cute ice cream shops. And parks, and it's got a bunch of baseball fields in the middle of it. But I would also argue that West U is very urban in many ways. It is incredibly walkable. You have a lot of homes next to businesses that people in those homes would use. You see kids walking to school. Where else in Houston do you see a lot of kids walking to their school? It's a place that really was set up to have good infrastructure, to be walkable and drivable and livable. In ways that I'd say other parts of Houston are aspiring to be.
Yeah. I mean, it feels to me like Mayberry for rich people.
Well, I mean, you know, it didn't always used to be for rich people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So back up. How did it get started? What is the history of West U?
So that's a good question. And I had that question too. Uh-huh. So this past week, I went down to the University of Houston Library to find a thesis that someone had written about the founding of West U. Which was titled Suburban Pioneers.
I would say that slightly
questionable framing, but the idea was that much how these brave pioneers tamed the West with their plows, these pioneers of Houston suburbs tamed the land with bond elections and water infrastructure. And like so much of Houston, West U really was founded out of flooding.
You had these
new developments out along the trolley lines, and you had right here at West U along, used to be a trolley on Bel Air, the idea that they'd sell a bunch of land, and the land had originally been sold from, you know, the Mexican government to some landholders, to the former governor of Tennessee, to some other landowners, et cetera, until turn of the 20th century, kind of around World War I, they start building homes. And they realize that when it rains, it floods in West U. And not only did it flood, but they described it as being like a saucer, where the water would just sit there, and it wouldn't go anywhere else. And the people who lived there realized that they needed ways to raise money to build flood infrastructure. And so the option they had at hand was to incorporate it. When they first incorporated...
What year was this?
1924. And the idea was that, like, well... we'll build this infrastructure and eventually we'll get annexed by the city of Houston, because everyone kind of wanted to get annexed by the city of Houston at the time. And you had all these new developments, you know, coming up around town, River Oaks, Southmore, all that kind of stuff. But eventually West U put so much money into its early infrastructure that it led to political controversy and people thought they were overtaxed and they were getting sued by their bondholders. But by the time all that kind of came to fruition, they realized they had really good infrastructure and they didn't trust the city of Houston to be as good. And they saw what was happening on the other side of the city boundaries and said, no, no, we're content to be ourselves. And like kind of the big cutting of the potential umbilical cord was when the city created its own wastewater treatment facility. So they didn't have to rely on the city of Houston for sewer services.
Wow. Okay. So who was living in Westview back then? What was it like?
White people mostly.
Well, okay. This was when Houston was mainly white or black?
Yes.
A little bit of Mexican?
There were laws prohibiting the sale, lease, or transfer of land to people, quote, of African descent. Though you can look at early census reports, and there were some black people living in the city. But the thing that really stood out to me is that if you look at the early homes that were originally built in Westview, they're much cheaper than the ones being built in Southside Place or other surrounding neighborhoods.
Cheaper for the time.
Right, cheaper for the time. I mean, housing was way cheaper back then.
This was not an upper class neighborhood at the time.
Not at all. It was aggressively middle class in contrast to other neighborhoods around it.
Houston's original neighborhood downtown is for everyone, and it's poppin'. It's our open-hearted home for our biggest celebrations and our treasured hidden gems. From the world-class theater district to incredible green spaces like Discovery Green, downtown is the place to be. In fact, more people visited downtown Houston last year than the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio combined. There's no better time to live downtown than now. From starter apartments to luxury lofts, everyone can take advantage of the arts, business, culture, entertainment, food, and recreation. Now, you might think of downtown as only the heartbeat of Houston's regional economy, which it is, but there's so much more to it, including free events throughout the week with Downtown Houston Plus. From the Market Square Park Farmers Market every Saturday to Yoga Flow every Wednesday, you can find something to do and eat and watch in downtown Houston. Learn more at downtownhouston.org. Downtown Houston, get energized and revived.
I have a personal connection to Westview, aside from the fact that I've been living here with my family for 17 years. My dad was born on Centenary Street.
Oh, wow.
In 1939.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah, so his family was one of those early families that lived there, and they lived here for several years. I don't know exactly how many years, but maybe 5 to 6 years before moving to a different part of town. But I love the fact that, you know, I have that family connection, even though there was a large gap of many decades that none of us lived here.
Right. What was your dad's family like in 1939?
Well, they were working people. My grandmother was married to her first husband, and that's when they had my dad. And they divorced, and then she remarried a lawyer, an oil and gas attorney. And, you know, they were very kind of simple people that grew into being cultured and enjoying the nicer things in life. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting because Pop had a housekeeper that he called Nanny, and she was a full-time live-in housekeeper. And his memories are mostly of his relationship with Nanny around the neighborhood.
Wow. Oh. Yeah. That idea of like a simple family that grew into being cultured, that sounds like West U to me too. I mean,
I think that there's a lot of, and what I've noticed recently is kind of a stunning presence of young people with lots of disposable income. So, you know, we moved into this neighborhood in 2005, and I was pregnant with our second child, and it was a stretch at the time. We found a great house at a great price, and these days, I think of the young families that are moving in at price points well above $1 million, sometimes even higher than that, and wonder, how are they pulling this off? They're so freshly married, they don't have families yet and are expecting to. But I think that there's a difference between, you know, these old families that have lived here for decades and then this new generation that's moving in, because it is such a family forward mm-hmm. area with its wonderful elementary school. So many people move in here because of the elementary school, which is now just about 100 years old, almost 100 years old.
Yeah.
And so it's really fascinating, this disparity of wealth, what looks like a disparity of wealth, and this sort of aspirational lifestyle.
And I'll just note that the uh-huh. Westview local government has a senior services program paid for out of taxpayer dollars to help support the people who have been in their homes for a very long time, who have been in the neighborhood for a long time and seen a change around them.
That's actually kind of nice. They're not pushing the older generation
out. Not pushing that. It's a weird sort of, like, it's not gentrification because it's always been gentrified, but there are these, you know, epochs of...
Okay, it started working class, and it's right. definitely not it working did. Class now, but the gentrification happened long ago.
The transition, yes. I think, happened yeah. in the 1970s, 1980s, and you can go back yeah. and read yeah. that there is sudden concern that they're tearing down these old homes and building big new homes, and there is concern at the time that you're building these homes that are too big, too close to each other, that's leading to a decline of the sea breeze that a lot of these older homes really relied on to stay cool during the summer, and if you have all these homes blocking the wind, you're not getting that anymore.
Right.
The 80s, the mid to late 80s, were when you saw all of the big brick colonials that started replacing the 1940s bungalows. Mm-hmm. And so but what is cool about this neighborhood is that you can drive around and, you know, some areas have morphed to look more homogenous, but you can still see such a mix of architectural styles that represent the different major eras of this neighborhood. And there's constantly new construction or reconstruction happening. Mm-hmm. So there's this, you know, real historical time capsule in Westview of being able to drive around and see the very cool old brick archways over the bungalows in the era that was popular. And then sort of the
shiplap
siding.
1920s, 30s.
Yeah.
Okay. And
then you just have the brick houses in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. And now what is very popular is doing like a German schmear. And so a lot of homes, mine included, we upgraded it or updated it rather with this new look that's becoming very popular. And actually a lot of new construction is doing that rather than doing it over old brick. They're actually, you know, starting.
So that's just
that
the
way.
White brick.
So it's it's a fascinating evolution of wealth and architectural styles and cultural changes that you can see anywhere in this neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
It is something neat about Westview that even though it has zoning, it doesn't have particular design codes in the way that you see in other high-end neighborhoods. And I'll just point out that Westview is home to the Darth Vader house.
Oh, yes. Okay, describe the Darth Vader house.
It is a house that looks like Darth Vader's mask. It is big and black and like angled in a weird way, almost kind of like a stealth bomber. And recently it went on the market. And I've been driving by for years and never saw the inside. and I swear when Steely Dan sings about high in the Custer Dome, like that is what the inside looks like. It's like real cocaine.
Did you go in?
I did not go when it was
open.
Oh, you did, Chris?
I did. Yes, and? I did. And it was, let's just say this. I don't know if anybody's purchased it, but it went on the market for, I think, a little over $4 million. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a very specific kind of buyer to move into that because mm-hmm. it's quite an unusual. It's got like weird corridors around the perimeter uh-huh. and oddly open in the middle. So like from the second floor, you can see directly into the master bedroom. There's no ceiling, I should say main bedroom. And all these little weird cubby bedrooms off, like it's almost... I mean, one can really imagine the kinds of shenanigans that could go on in that place.
Oh, yeah. And something else you see in these Westview homes, you see a lot of homes starting to get rid of their yard. You see this move away from the grass yard. And while there are setback requirements, you see people putting in gardens, see people putting in xeriscaping. It's really interesting to see that type of flexibility. I remember the first home I saw where they didn't put in that sod front yard was in Westview. And I was kind of shocked by it at the time, but now it seems like they're really ahead of themselves.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I think that gets at something really important about Westview is that sort of focus on the yard and mm-hmm. the front-facing thing. And Chris, the opening of your novel is all about that. Could you talk a little about that?
Well, so the opening of A Gracious Neighbor features the protagonist, Martha Hale, observing the fact that, you know, in early February, a lot of her neighbors have started pruning back their crepe myrtles. And she's reflecting on the fact that, you know, if it were up to her, she wouldn't commit crepe murder, which is a lot of what horticulturists say is happening when people trim back their crepe myrtles.
Because it leaves those ugly knobs.
It leaves those ugly, gnarled knots that look like arthritic hands. Uh-huh. And yet she, and she's a fictional character, but I think, you know, we can identify with this.
Yes.
She's so self-conscious about what her neighbors are going to think if she doesn't trim her crepe myrtles that she goes ahead and commits crepe murder anyway. And it is very much a symbol of this desire to conform and to participate in this overall beautification of the neighborhood by keeping your own front lawn tidy and groomed and beautified. And so I think that, you know, that is not a shocker. I mean, you don't see many houses in this neighborhood that aren't well tended.
In some way. They may be well tended in different ways, but there's definitely
but they are all groomed. There is an absolute effort. And every single day of the week, you hear gas-powered blowers and lawn crews. Everybody's out getting their lawns tended.
That's something that I think I was shocked by the very beginning of COVID, staying at home all day for the first time, realizing how much hired manpower it takes to maintain these lawns, to maintain this aesthetic.
Yeah.
That there really is this whole labor force out there required to do any of this, because if people had to do it themselves, I don't think it'd get done.
To me, Westview feels super safe. You know, just this great, beautiful place to raise kids. What do y'all think?
I work from home as a writer, and so I was very fortunate to be able to be at home when my kids were little. And what I loved, my block butts up against Community Drive. So there's not a whole lot of through traffic, but we basically treated it like a dead end street. And the kids, all the kids on the block were always outside, you know, riding ripsticks and skateboards and their bikes and their whatever, dragging each other around, you know, like they were skiing behind a bicycle. And what I loved is that, you know, I never locked my door until it was nighttime and we were ready to close up for the night. But I had kids running in and out of my house all day long, eating out of my fridge, you know, need a Band-Aid, need a hug, need a glass of water. And everybody on the block was like that. And it was fantastic because there was this real sense of old fashioned community and that everybody felt safe. Everybody was seen. And I can't speak that that's true on a much busier block in the neighborhood, but where we happened to be, it always felt so safe and that there were enough mothers and fathers, parents around and at home to keep an eye on this collective group of kids that were growing up around each other.
Oh, yeah. Do you think it still feels that way?
It does. My kids are older now. I have one who's in college and one who's in high school. But there's a whole new batch of little Biddles, and they're doing the same thing. I love it.
Oh, yeah, I see these dang teens going around their neighborhood on their bikes, doing teen stuff. And it feels nice in a way that you can go down these streets that there's not too much traffic. They just lowered the speed limit to 25 miles an hour. And while the city does lack, say, for bike lanes and the sidewalks are a little narrow, they are well maintained. You can kind of rely that if you know the right streets to go down at the right time of day, you can walk in the middle of the road and don't have to worry too much about it.
Exactly.
Oh, it's very sweet. So if someone is not living in Westview, if they're an outsider and they want to experience it, is it easy? Can we just come in and go look at things? Or
I mean, don't speed. Yeah. Like they'll pull you over.
Okay, that's important. Mm-hmm. All right.
There's not much of a shopping area like an old, you know, small town that you think of outside of, you know, like in the hill country. Mm-hmm. But there is a little shopping area and there is Milk
Where
and
is
Cookies
that?
And Tiny's. Uh-huh. Milk and Cookies is on Edlow at Rice. Mm-hmm. And it is owned by the same people that own Tiny's number 5, which is part of the Tiny Boxwoods. And it's like they've got a window. So you just walk up to the window and you can order milk and cookies. And it's a fun little thing.
That is very Westview, yes. Mm-hmm.
But then you can hang a play at the West Elementary Playground. You can go to any of the parks are open. There's no checking to see if you're a resident. Now, you do have to have a membership to go to the pool.
Can I buy my way in?
No, I don't think. I don't think members.
You can buy a daily pass. Yeah.
Okay.
A daily pass, but it's not. Yeah, you can't buy a membership if you're not a taxpaying resident.
Yeah. Is there anything else people ought to make sure to see in Westview?
Well, there's two more restaurants that I would want to note.
Yeah.
And one of them is Little Matt's, which is kind of a like a kid's version of a Greasy Spoon kind of place. They got like burger. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever been to like Jack's or Skeeter's or any of those kind of like
places you might places. Take a, you get a burger. Team. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it is the like platonic ideal of where you take a softball team. They have like burgers, fries, you know, pizza, whatever. They've got a whole thing there of different candies you can buy, different ice cream bars, soft serve. They've got margaritas for the parents.
Because they need them.
They've got a little like
And an arcade.
Yeah, arcade in the back. Where else do you get arcades these days? They still have a little arcade. And they also have little like iPads for kids to play games on too. You know, and then next to that, you have Topo, which is this kind of Mexican City style restaurant.
So Mexico City got, style, very urban, very stylish.
Yeah, very stylish. Great wine menu, small, but interesting. They got really good tacos. I think it came down from a taco truck that decided to become a restaurant. And the little spot where it is all along Edlow. It is really good. It's also got great pastries and good coffee. Something I think is always good is like you just, you know, drive there, park your car, maybe have a little boozy brunch and just walk through the neighborhood.
Oh.
You know, you've got a lot of shaded streets. And it's like, look at the homes, look at the gardens. And they are installing a new walk path along Edlow that goes north along this drainage ditch called Poor Farm Ditch. That was like built way early in the city's history. I know. And it used to be that it was kind of surrounded by a bunch of trees and growth. It was all killed in the big freeze. And so the city thought to themselves, well, should we put in like more trees? They're like, well, we've got this kind of space right here. Like, why don't we put on a walking path? Because they see kids walking down that stretch every day to try to get to school. They have families walking along there. Well, this is a much nicer way to walk than just a little sidewalk.
Great. All right, y'all. This is so good. I need to go check out some of this stuff. Thank you.
Thanks for having
us. My pleasure. Yeah.
That was Evan Mintz and Chris Kander. We will have a link to Chris's novel, A Gracious Neighbor, which has great descriptions of Westview, in our show notes. Now, I am here with producer Farrell Gibbs. Farrell, what else is going on around town today?
Hey, Lisa. Well, for what it's worth, the guys over at Space City Weather say that this week may be the most normal weather week of summer so far. It must be something when normal seems newsworthy. They say that rain chances will be a little higher today than yesterday and could even climb throughout the week to 20 to 30% chances. It will still be in the mid-90s temperature-wise, but that's normal for Houston in July, right? They did say there was potential for a tropical wave in the Atlantic to form later this week, but that seems to have dissipated. So all is quiet in the tropics as well. So if you can, enjoy this normal week because next week they expect hotter, lower rain chance weather to return.
That's it for today on CityCast Houston. We want to do more of these shows about neighborhoods. And we'd love to hear from y'all on what neighborhoods you want to hear about. What neighborhoods do you think people ought to know about? Who ought to talk with us about them? What should we be talking about in them? Please, please give us your ideas. We'll have contact info in our show notes. And if y'all want to see photos of that Darth Vader house, oh my God, you gotta check it out. Check out our Instagram account. We are at CityCast Houston. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk with you then.
Come hang out. We'll have some coffee. Yeah. And we'll go for and cookies, milk and cookies, and we'll go for a walk.
Oh, that sounds fun. All right. Chris, I may really take you up on that.